I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and this is Dying to Ask the Road to Paris. Today, we're talking about the Olympic trial system. It is a very American way of picking an Olympic team. So the theory is you have one day, one race or performance, and then the top people on that day get to go to the Olympics. So various sports use this trial system: track and field, swimming, marathon, diving, wrestling, gymnastics. We do a lot of trials. Most of them actually happen very close to the Olympics. So for example, swimming and track and field, even gymnastics, happen a couple of weeks before you go to the Olympics, which is crazy to think about, that you have that many spots determined that close to the games. Team USA typically has the biggest team at any Olympics. So this summer in Paris, we'll have anywhere from 500 to 600 athletes probably on Team USA. We are very deep on talent. So our Olympic trial system is actually like having a mini Olympics in our country and all over our country in the host cities. We're very, very deep on talent. So there are a lot of pros for our trial system. Let me go over a couple of them. So from an athlete's point of view, pros would include you have a chance to show how much talent we have. You have a chance for people to develop their skills. People will sometimes go to multiple Olympic trials within their athletic career. It's a great way to benchmark development if you're trying to grow a sport. It's a great way for athletes to secure sponsorships because they get on a stage as one of the top Americans in a sport. And what I really love is that the trial system is built for the underdog. You can have no history of being really, really good at something, go to the trials, kill it at the trials, and the next thing you know, you're on an Olympics. How amazing is that? For the fans, pros would include the fact that a trials can be really, really exciting because it is like a mini Olympics. Lots of drama, lots of fun. For host cities, you get a lot of attention. Well, if you hold a really good trials, you get a lot of attention and you get a lot of media coverage. Okay, now let me be Debbie Downer. I'm going to give you some negatives for the trials. From an athlete's point of view, one day, one trial, one hitch, like say an untied shoelace at a marathon trials, and a lifetime of work goes down the toilet. So it doesn't take into account all the years of experience and achievements. And it also doesn't really take into effect whether or not somebody will be peaking athletically in the actual Olympics themselves. From a team standpoint, a negative would be underdogs are awesome, except they don't have experience. That's what makes them an underdog. And on an Olympic stage, having that experience athletically and mentally, emotionally can be really crucial. So you might not have somebody who is truly ready to be in that environment, although they do their best to get them ready. Okay, host cities. Here's your big negative. It is so expensive, so incredibly expensive. Now, Orlando just hosted the Olympic marathon trials, and while it's not saying exactly how much it spent to be able to put on the trials, the estimate from previous host cities has been around $2 million to be able to foot all the behind-the-scenes costs of putting on that event. Orlando claims that it made something like $12 million locally from filling hotel rooms and restaurants, things like that, the economic impact. They were very pleased with the way it worked out for them. But other cities like Atlanta have said, we don't know that we could ever do it again because it was so expensive. So the fear with some people is that the Olympic trial system, kind of like the Olympics in general, is becoming so out of range price-wise for a lot of cities that it might not make fiscal sense for them to put themselves out there as hosts. And if that happens, how would you pick your Olympic team? And what you'd probably have to do is go to the system that virtually every other country does, and that is have a committee pick athletes based on their achievements and other non-tangible things. And that's where it gets very subjective. And it's a lot less fun for us fans, to be quite honest. So that's what we're talking about today. My guest is Erin Stout. She is a freelance journalist. She's based out of Flagstaff, Arizona. And she writes about health, fitness, and Olympic sports. She also loves to focus on some of the big issues that female athletes are dealing with these days. And she has written for everyone over the years, everybody from The Guardian to The Washington Post, NBC News, Runner's World, Women's Health. And most recently, she wrote an article for Outside Online that really caught my eye. And she does such a brilliant job of explaining the question that a lot of people have about the Olympic trials, specifically for marathon. So the article is called "The U.S. Olympic Trials Marathon at a Crossroads. Can the beloved event survive?" And I will link to this in the show notes for this episode. So today we're taking a pragmatic look at what it takes to host a trials and whether marathon trials should continue the way that they have and what that might mean for athletes and fans in the future. Erin is joining us from her home in Flagstaff, Arizona. She lives at 7,000 feet. She's a big runner. And I asked her if she had ever run into Kim Conley, the two-time Olympian who I've covered over the years, in Flagstaff, because that's where Erin and her husband Drew live now. And she laughed and she goes, "Yeah, she's my neighbor." They live in the same complex. So there you have it. Always an Olympic connection. Here is my conversation with Erin Strout on this Dying to Ask, The Road to Paris. Olympians, they're just different. Sure, they're fitter and faster, but they're mentally different too. Because when the body breaks down, the Olympic mindset takes over. I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and I've traveled to 10 Olympics for Hearst Television with my partner, Mike Domolog. But Domi and I were home for the last two games because of the pandemic. But this summer, the Olympics are back in all their glory, and we're going to Paris. Fans in the stands, the full athlete experience, and it's Paris! For the end. Join us for the backstories of how Team USA gets to the top of a podium and how you can add a little Olympic edge in your life. Erin, thanks so much for coming on the Dying to Ask podcast. It's really nice to meet you.
It's nice meeting you too. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. As I read your bio and I saw the things you've done over the years, I saw so many boxes that you have checked that I have as well. So I feel like if we lived in the same place, we would probably be friends. Very similar interests.
Yes, for sure.
So you are a freelance writer. You're based out of Flagstaff, Arizona. And you've been writing about endurance sports, running, and specifically women's issues for many, many years.
I have. Yeah, it's been, it's sort of evolved over many years, but that's kind of where I've ended up and what my primary interest is definitely women's sports.
Yeah. And as recently as like the 2020 Olympics for Tokyo, you actually worked as a strategist to figure out how do we even cover an Olympics in a pandemic, which I thought was so interesting.
Yeah, it was, as you know, it was kind of a weird time, especially.
That's putting it mildly.
Yeah. And we were, you know, I was working at Women's Running full time then. And our editor in chief and I, Jen Ader, we were, you know, set to go to Tokyo, as I think a lot of journalists were, and then learned a little bit more about sort of how it was going to be there. And was it worth the resources? And, you know, how could we possibly provide sort of the same coverage from the United States. And so I actually flew to my mother's house on the East Coast because the time zones kind of matched up a little bit better. And because we had credentials, we could like access the virtual, like we could be in the press conferences with the medalists and ask questions just like we could if we were there. And, you know, just over the years, having some connections with some of the media people that are super helpful, you know, if you needed to, you know, get a question in the mix zone or something like that, which we did a little bit. But yeah, it was wacky hours, but we still did the same live coverage that we would have done had we been there.
Yeah. So it's again, I say we have had very parallel professional lives. That's basically what I was doing during that time as well, is covering the Olympics from actually being here versus being there in the middle of it, which was a really interesting experience. And having been to other ones, I really felt for the athletes and that what I knew what they were missing out on, even if a lot of the newbies did not know what they were missing out on, which I think is why Paris is so exciting to so many people, whether you're a fan, an athlete, somebody associated with the movement. Like, it's back on, it's real, it's going to be big. And it's like the biggest do-over since the pandemic for these athletes.
Yeah, definitely. And I, like you said, I really felt for the athletes in Tokyo because, I mean, a lot of them, you know, you maybe only make the Olympics once in your whole career, and not having your family and your friends there to be able to watch that experience with you and have it, you know, have their own experiences there too. Yeah, it was a little bit heartbreaking on a lot of levels.
And that is why, as we segue into your article, I think the Olympic trials so far are capturing American attention in a way that maybe we haven't seen even since I don't even really know ever. I think we're like really, really excited about it. And we certainly saw that during the U.S. Olympic marathon trials in Orlando at the beginning of February. I mean, it looked amazing on TV. It had everything you could possibly ask for: underdogs finishing, great weather, city that genuinely wanted to host it, lots of fans. But as your article points out, there's an underlying question about the Olympic trials system in general that at some point has got to be answered in this country. What was it that led you to write this article? What did you start asking yourself?
Well, I think just, you know, in the world of, you know, our little world of running in general, and especially those of us who've been covering distance running on the pro level for so long, I think a lot of people, it wasn't sort of a novel idea. I think a lot of people have been asking these questions for a number of years, because we know that, you know, the crux of the problem is that the Olympic trials marathon, although it is super popular, it's become super popular. It wasn't always, but it's become, you know, this event that fans and spectators love, the athletes love it, you know, the chance to go head to head with Americans, it just doesn't exist otherwise. And so, but the event itself is pretty expensive to put on. There aren't a lot of ways to recoup that money. And so these local organizing committees, they don't really have an opportunity to make any money off of it, or at least cover their expenses. And so I think we've seen less interest from organizations willing to host it, because it's a money losing endeavor.
Yeah. And on a bigger scale, we're seeing that at the Olympic level as well, where host cities are saying, why? Yeah, it'd be cool, but why? Right. Why would we do it? Because we can't. So break it down for people who might not be familiar with how this works. A city has an organizing committee, or usually a sports commission, that says, we want to bring, say, the marathon trials here. What does it actually take to do that?
Yeah, so you you go through a request for proposal with USATF, which is the governing body of the sport. You pay $100,000 for the right to host it. And then most of the operational costs associated with hosting this big marathon with, you know, all these elite athletes, it falls on the local organizing committee. They don't get a lot of support from the governing body or the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, which, you know, they're getting revenue from the broadcast rights and other major corporate sponsors, which also precludes the local organizing committee from getting competing sponsors. and so
when you talk about some of those costs, I'm on the board for the Sacramento Running Association. So we put on the California National Marathon. And so I've been privy to a lot of those conversations, and I've seen the spreadsheets of what it costs to host some of these events. And it is expensive. And you're talking about everything from closing roads down to security to having barricades up to, there are all kinds of things that come up that you would not think about that create that huge expense. And what I read in your article was that Orlando ended up fronting about $2 million to be able to host the trials.
They have not verified how much they actually put into it. But in the past, you know, Atlanta, I think, put in about $2 million in 2020. I've heard from other reliable sources that I know, like even back in 2008, when New York Roadrunners hosted the men's trials, which was actually in 2007, they probably put in about $1 million. And so you go through all these like organizations that have paid heavily to host these trials. And, you know, like Rich Kenna told me from the Atlanta Track Club, like, we'd love to host them again. We can't afford to, so we probably never will again. And so you burn through all these organizations who can't afford to host again.
Atlanta had like 700 athletes who ended up taking part in their trials. It was hundreds of athletes fewer in Orlando for a couple of reasons. The prime one being that it was a lot harder to get into the trials. They lowered the threshold to be able to get in. But for some of these cities that have said, wow, that was a lot of money and we just probably couldn't do it again, can you talk about some of the other expenses that they had to like cover in terms of the athletes and lodging and hotels and all that kind of thing?
Yeah. So it's become sort of expected that the local organizing committee will also put up the prize money, which this year was $600,000, which is not cheap. And that, you know, was dispersed among the top 10 women and the top 10 men. Travel expenses for all the athletes, hotel accommodations for all the athletes. You know, I think they have, you know, meals for the athletes. It just all in the hospitality itself on race day. I mean, you're even paying for the porta potties. I mean, there's just like expense out of expense out of expense.
Which are more expensive than you would think. And very necessary, but very expensive. So there are a lot of costs that go alongside it. Now, Orlando has said, we got great bang for the buck. Not that Orlando really needs more attention, but they were seen around the world. They had a beautiful weather day. Orlando has probably never looked better. They filled hotel rooms. They got people to go to the parks. They for them, it seems to have paid off, and they seem very positive about it. Although, as you point out, people never want to give out the numbers, but they seem pretty positive about it. But there are a lot of other cities who would love to host something like this, but might be looking and going, we just can't do it. Why, from an athlete perspective, could that be a problem? And what would be an alternative to holding the trials? Which is a very American thing, by the way.
Yeah, it is. Most countries have, and this is, you know, a potential solution to the problem, is that, you know, USATF would form a selection committee. And form criteria that they would just select these athletes instead of having a trials, which, you know, from the people that I've talked to, athletes, former athletes, coaches, agents, they and spectators and fans, nobody wants that because everybody just has like such a place in their heart for this actual competition. Another way to select athletes would be, you know, just looking at race results from the past year and kind of choosing the people that have, you know, met the Olympic standard and they think have a chance at medaling. But, you know, all of these things leave a lot of room for error, and don't consider people like, you know, Fiona O'Keefe, who had never run a marathon before and she won in a, you know, event record, or Dakota Lindworm, who probably wasn't on a ton of people's radars. So, you know, it's hard. Other countries do it and they do well at the Olympics. So, that is an alternative, and it's just not an alternative that I hear a lot of people wanting.
Yeah, I mean, and most other countries do pick their teams that way. And they do look at our trial system and go, why would you guys do that? But in this country, because we have such a massive Olympic team, we'll have 500 or 600 athletes in Paris this summer. It puts a little mini Olympics in cities all over the country, and it gets people excited. And that has value as well, and tradition. And I think we love that romantic notion of somebody like a Fiona O'Keefe, the underdog who on paper should not have done what she did and then does. Who doesn't love that story?
Right. People love that. And I think it's great for the sport that doesn't get a lot of attention outside of these every 4 years. It gets, you know, athletes a bigger platform. It does wonders for their careers. Just like there's a lot of upside to holding a trials. And I, like you said, I think it spreads the Olympic movement further, at a time where I think they could stand to, you know, have those positive vibes in more places.
So when you mentioned the organizer from Atlanta, what has he put forward as a solution? Because I can imagine he has now seen it from both ways. He put on an amazing trials, but so what are some of the alternatives or solutions that some people are pushing for to try to preserve the trial system?
Yeah, he and a lot of other people think that USATF should be perhaps putting aside some money every year that, you know, goes toward this event to help support the local organizing committee, maybe putting up the prize money or sharing the broadcast rights or, you know, whatever the structure may be. But I think a lot of people are just calling for, you know, the leaders of USATF and NBC and, you know, all this, the USOPC, like all of these stakeholders to come together and come up with a better solution for financing the event itself.
And so when you asked USATF what they thought about sharing some money, what was the response?
They did not grant me an interview, so I don't know what their response is.
Shocking. Shocking. What is the your fear if we did go to more of a selection process by committee? What would be the main downsides other than we'd lose out on all the fun of the trials? What would be some real negatives that you could see?
Well, I think for the athletes themselves, I think you know, even the people that toe the line that aren't gonna make the Olympic team, that is, you know, a reason to stay in the sport. It develops the sport. It gives people a reason to, you know, develop their talent over several years. So I think, you know, it's a feeder system for, you know, future talent, which I think mm-hmm. is important. I also just think it draws more people to want to follow these athletes. Everybody gets excited for the trials. Like, you can see on every social media, you know, in our little running world, you can see, you know, the spike in interest and engagement in the sport itself and in the athletes, people getting to know who these people are and wanting to then follow them to watch mm-hmm. them in the Olympics, I think is important too. I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons why I feel like the trials are important.
What would you think if we had a system where we just had one or two, maybe three locations in the country that were official Olympic trial marathon sites? I could also see that being a solution mm-hmm. that could come up, which has been discussed as well for hosting an Olympics because it's become harder and harder to find host cities.
Yeah, I mean, I would be on board with that. I think also, you know, as you know, you've gone to many Olympics and then you see these devastating pictures of these facilities that they built and now they're just falling apart and nobody uses them. Like, what a waste of, you know, resources and everything else. If you just had like, you know, two or three go-tos where all the facilities are used and, you know, the upkeep is there and, you know, I think it saves a lot of money. It saves a lot of grief in a lot of these different areas.
Well, there's a lot to think about in the next couple of years with 2028 Olympics being in LA. Obviously, there'll be a big push to continue developing our Olympic marathon talent and, you know, other talent in the other sports. Have we announced anything in terms of who would be hosting the marathon trials for 2028?
No, no announcements. And usually it doesn't come until much later. But there is a push from a lot of people in the sport to have it actually on the Olympic marathon course to put, you know, our athletes in the best position and be able to get a preview of what's to come should they make the team. It makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
A trial run, although shutting down roads in LA is never fun.
No.
No, it's not. That's for sure. So what else are you working on these days?
Oh, gosh. I am kind of all over the map. I don't have any like specific running oriented things on my plate right now, but I do have, I co-wrote a book with two therapists. And it's about female athlete mental health, and that will be coming out in June. It's called The Price She Pays. And so everybody can pre-order that now if they want to.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it was the last year of my life. So yeah, just
last
coming
year
out
of life
that fog.
With two therapists every day. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Some heavy topics that gets into, you know, eating disorders, anxiety, depression, wow. suicide. Some heavy topics, but needed. And we take kind of a look at why some of these issues affect female athletes specifically. And so I think, you know, it'll be of interest to a lot of people. So,
yeah, no, that's a fantastic topic. That's great. What are some good ways for people to keep up with you and all the different topics you're writing about?
Well, let's see. I'm at Erin Strout on all the social media channels. And yeah, that's probably the best way. I have a website by erinstroud.com where I usually post my work as it becomes published. So those are two good ways.
All right, put on your future hat. Do you think the Olympic marathon trials survive the way they are?
I think definitely in 2028, seeing as the Olympics are in the United States. After that, I don't know.
Yeah, stay tuned for that. Well, Erin, thank you so much. It was really nice to meet you and really enjoyed your article, and we'll be sure to share it in the liner notes or the show notes for this episode.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Next on Dying to Ask the Road to Paris, we're heading to Stanford University. The men's gymnastics team has basically become a feeder to the U.S. national men's gymnastics team. And the Olympic team this year will likely sneak in a little cardinal into the red, white, and blue. We're going to talk about how Stanford got so dominant and what the head coach has created culture-wise that seems to be working. A lot of life lessons for the rest of us. If you're a manager in an office or maybe a coach on a youth sports team, finding out what they're doing at Stanford may impact how you interact with others, too. If you would like to interact with me and you have an Olympic story idea, I'd love to hear about it. Two ways you can do that. You can email me, dfitzpatrick@hearst.com. Hearst is H-E-A-R-S-T. Or if it's easier, you can always reach out to me on Instagram, where you will find me at runreadsip. Thanks so much for listening today. If you have a moment to leave us a rating or review wherever you happen to be listening to the show right now, I would so appreciate it. We are currently running this Olympic podcast in the sports category on all the big podcast platforms, which means I'm going up against the Kelce brothers and their show. Not easy, because I'm not dating Taylor Swift. Spoiler. Anyway, I would love those ratings and reviews. If you could take a minute to share the show or leave the rating or review, it absolutely helps other people find out about this Olympic podcast. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.